skull. I command the jaw bridge. Open!
Yes, that's right. We have traveled to Eternia to enter Castle Grayskull. Join Optimus Solo and TF Joe and Mike as they find themselves telling tales of Eternia. We cover all things He-Man in this 45-episode-long podcast. You can find us on iTunes and www.geekassradio.com. By the power of Grayskull, we all have the power.
Unik Waterhall continues, as tonight I sit down with Until We Sleep Comics, Mr. Bob Gar. Per usual, this will contain detailed spoilers and some language. Listener discretion is advised.
Should you choose to accept it, will be of great importance. So many people out there in the world have a voice, but no one's listening. Until now, the Tangibound Network is offering you the chance to have every voice heard. The TBN is offering a free podcast to anyone with a voice. I have to go, but before I do, remember, your voice counts. Check out the Tangibound Network. Go to tangiboundnetwork.com for details.
Welcome once again to Hunnic Outcasts, and Hunnic Waterhall 2015 continues and then some. As you know, hit 5 comic book stores on free comic book day, 8 hours, got a plethora of comics, bought a few comics, going to be reviewing, interviewing their artists, and of course, there's Wizard World. And I'm not done yet, because Wizard World is also going to be bleeding into Florida, but I'll get there when I get there. At free comic book day, I met artist, writer, creator, Bob Gar from Until We Sleep and Until We Sleep Comics. Now, I was enthralled with this because the cover alone, I don't know what it is, but it reminds me of any of those 80s metal cover band, you know, on the LPs. Now, I have to ask you, because this is several of the questions, and we're going to get into this about these characters. But sure. The first thing, of course, Bob, this was a Kickstarter.
Yes.
Now, I have to ask, because when did you start up the Kickstarter for this project?
Well, the Kickstarter was a few months ago. We were getting number one ready to roll it off, and we thought, well, we need a little help. Let's try the Kickstarter, because what took us a little bit by surprise was the fact that printing a book is $2.70 a pop. And we were like, uh-oh. We didn't expect it to be quite that much. So we thought, let's try Kickstarter, see how we do. And things went very well for us. We did very, very well. We did better than we thought we would, actually.
So how many books were you able to print?
Well, we've done the first issue that you have in your hand there. Roughly now there's about 200 copies in existence of that as we speak. But we've had some variant covers. And the variant covers, we can't keep. They keep selling out wherever we go. So we've got a few of the regular comics left. Excuse me. And also the sales have been very good. We've been very, very happy about it. And we've gotten some really good fan comments back. And so we've already got people that are like, where's number two? I'm like, that's exactly what I'm going to hear. Great.
Yes, and that's what I was going to ask you the same thing, too, about that.
To the second issue?
Yes.
Hopefully within the next couple of months, we're going to try and have that done. We're going to try and have a few books ready in time for the Baltimore Comic Con in September. So that's what we're shooting for right now.
Perfect. Yes. Now, I've been asking this with all my artists and writers that I've been interviewing, and I never get tired of this one. It's kind of like, you know, an inside the actor studio, you know, like. But for you, when did you first put, you know, pen to paper or express your creativity?
No, believe it or not, it's been 4 years to get to this point. I had had a nightmare one night, and it startled me, somebody woke me up, and I was like, wow, these images I have in my head, this would be a really good comic horror comic book. I'm like, okay, so I grabbed a pen and paper, and I started writing down all these notes, and also before I forget them, and I really didn't think much about it. I was like, yeah, it was kind of cool. I went back to sleep. Well, I woke up the next morning, and I looked at what I had written, and I'm like, wow, this is great stuff here. So I thought, well, I'll try and see if I can do something with it. Well, I'm friends with Ken Hazer from The Living Corpse, and Ken said, why don't you make a comic book out of this? And I said, oh, you know, I can't do that. I've got a late start in the business. I'm old. And he's like, I'll give it a shot. I'm like, okay. So I ended up writing the book, and there was a company that was into it. I'm not going to say their names because it didn't end very well, so I'll be nice. But they were interested and took control of it, and we tried to get things rolling, and there was a book that actually came out, a pre-number one now, it's been called the preview issue, and a few of those came out, and then unfortunately things with that company fell apart in a hurry, and so that was 2 years gone there, and then I ended up having to write it again. But the good thing was that through this company I met a bunch of the guys that are the kind of company that I'm in now, and we decided that to avoid that ever happening to us again, we'd form our own company. So, and the rest is history.
Good.
There's how we got.
Now, Until We Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it this is the first professional thing that you've written, because you've only.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where did you come up with the name exactly?
The name came from I was thinking of something. Akin to like death in the graveyard and things like that. I've got this weird thing about death where I'm very interested in it, and I guess it's because it's one of those things that none of us will ever avoid. And you'll love this, but to be honest, the name came to me while sitting down listening to a David Gilmour CD, David Gilmour from Pink Floyd, and there's a song there called Until We Sleep, and I was like, perfect. That's it. This was meant to be. There it was. The sleep of death, the final resting place in the graveyard. And that's why I thought to myself, yep, until we sleep. There we go. That works.
Now, of course, as a writer, you're always, you know, suggested write about what you know. Now, you're in New Jersey, and I take it, of course. I think at least the story does take place in Jersey.
Yes, the story takes place in Jersey. I actually live in Maryland.
But I have to ask you, with the demons in the story, did the New Jersey Devil have any inspiration at all? Because I remember I lived in New York, wasn't too far from Jersey. We're not too from Jersey now, but right. The Jersey Devil. I mean, there was several parapsychology books based on the entity. He has been mentioned in some sci-fi documentaries. I think there was a movie. Was he ever thought of being put into the story? Was that one of the inspirations?
That was one of the inspirations. I always found that interesting, an interesting read, and things like that. I'm very, very interested in, and I love to gain facts about things, and you know, and so that's what I put in New Jersey. Plus the fact that on that page where the six different towns are shown with the holes in front of the tombstones. Each one of those towns is where one of my friends lived. So it was kind of like an inside joke of where the holes of the in front of the graves were at. So, yep. So that was the inside joke. But yes, the New Jersey Devil part of it as well. Yes.
Now, of course, I've asked this as well because I'm reading the first few pages, and I guess we were children of the 80s. I mean, in 80s movies, you always had Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, of course, you know, kids having sex, they're going to get killed. Now, of course, we have in the opening pages, we have teenagers having sex, and then all of a sudden demons are coming out and tearing the, you know, the lovers apart.
Yes.
I have to ask you, because I grew up in New York, in the suburb, well, in the boroughs anyway, not the suburbs, but the point being is that there were several graveyards by me. They never spooked me, mind you. I mean, they were just there, but a lot of them were old, and Some were forgotten, you know, they were unkept. Nobody knew that they were even there. And if somebody did come across a forgotten graveyard, there would be beer bottles and there would be, you know, people having sex behind, you know, and so forth, and desecrations. And of course, I'm sure you've watched Return of the Living Dead. You had to. I mean, we all did in the 80s.
Of course. So, absolutely.
I have to ask, is this paying homage to those type of situations about what the kids have done or what we've seen the kids done in REEL life or REAL life?
Yes. In fact, it was... you've nailed it right on the head, and it is kind of an homage to the teeny boppers of the 80s, you know, knowing that you shouldn't do what you're doing because bad things will happen to you, and but yeah, Return of the Living Dead, an absolute classic movie, one of my all-time favorites. It was a little homage to Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and all, and I wanted to put that little joke type thing in there. So we have the punk kids that are like busting up the graveyard because that used to happen. That's happened a lot near where I live. And the ultimate desecration to me was the kid urinating, you know, showing no respect whatsoever, urinating on a gravestone. And I thought, well, let's teach this little so and so something. And so that's why I had the demon hand come up out of the ground and grab him by his crotch and pull him down to the netherworld.
That's something else I wanted to ask as well. I've noticed that it's cut and dry, and I have seen people in these, you know, quote-unquote forgotten graveyards that do pee around the tombstones, and it's nothing new.
No.
This is, of course, nothing new either, that there have been people in movies that have done this and have been, you know, there has been retribution by the ghouls. But my other question is that in my neck of the woods, there was a lot of racism. There were a lot of skinheads that were, you know, painting the swastikas on tombstones at Jewish graveyards. My question is, of course, and there's also Tales of the Hood where, you know, there's race is involved as well when the demon comes back to avenge himself. Is there ever going to be, because this is, you know, parts of Jersey, will there ever be sort of like between good and evil, will there be any race relations at all? Will there be any more in-depth about these teenagers, like any backstory about them?
To be honest, no, not really. I don't have anything racist about it at all. I'm not for that at all. And this was just to set the tone of everything of this creature that's the villain of the book, why or how he builds his army and what he's up to. So the first issue basically is setting all of that up, of why this demon wants to do what he's wanting to do.
Let's talk about, of course, one of the kids that's being dragged into hell. And I love the images, by the way, because I'm looking at this right now. And I love this one-page layout where you have, I guess it almost looks like Mike from Monsters, Inc., where, you know, with the one eyeball and the teeth. Yes. Was that based on him at all?
No, that was just a happenstance, believe it or not.
Happenstance. But I love it with the eyeball and the chainsaw. I'm assuming this has got to be hell, of course. Or it's got to be something reasonably facsimile of. Everybody has all their different images of being dragged into hell and what hell is supposed to be. This also feels like something out of an 80s ballad, rock ballad. I'm assuming, of course, that's where you got your inspiration from, but I really do love these images. It's always hard, in whether you're reading stories or whatever you see on TV, about somebody being dragged into hell and a variation. How were you trying to make things a little bit different?
Well, you know, you always see the people drug into hell and they're just like, you know, tormented for all eternity and things like that. And I thought, well, this villain, Despair, is building an army, so why don't we see how he builds the army? So with this kid being pulled through the ground and into this hell area, and we get to see what they're doing to the humans and the transformation of them from human being to demon to becoming a part of Despair's army. And that's what I wanted the reader to see, was the process of how this all works.
Now, of course, how long does it take you from, like, start to finish you want to work on one issue? Like, putting it together, writing it, laying it out, printing it up?
For me, it's... this issue here took a couple of weeks to get it all down because I had it all fresh in my head. And I like to have, I've got a computer off the side here that's covered in nothing but post-it notes for future issues and things like that. So I like to have everything orderly. But, it's a matter of maybe weeks for writing it up, and then it takes a couple of months to get it drawn. You know, we got to have it drawn and then inked and colored and the letters put all in and all that. So it takes a few months to get it going.
Well, that's great. Now, I've always asked a lot of writers and artists in the business. There's Jack Kirby, there's Stan Lee. Who would you consider to be, if you could, your mentor?
Neil Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman, good. That's a good one.
I have to think about that at all, yes. Huge fan of his, been a big fan of his. I still am a huge fan of The Sandman. I think it's one of the greatest comics ever written. He was basically he's the only writer I've ever stood in line 4 hours to meet, and actually was kind of semi-starstruck when I met him. The guy behind that was my friend that went with me. So it was pretty funny to watch me because I got up to Neil and went, "Hi, Mr. Gaiman." He was like, "Just talk to him," and Neil was very nice, and that just solidified my thoughts about him. But yeah, Neil Gaiman all the way.
Now, I'm sure we've all had creative differences. Do you ever have any with your staff, or do you have anything with any other publishers that may want to say, "Okay, we love your book, but here are notes"?
In fact, the way I write is, that's how I write my comic books, it's basically like a movie script. And what I want to do is I want to make sure that the artist knows that I give them freedom, because sometimes some of their ideas are better than mine. So I like to keep it open, leave some artistic freedom to it and all. And between the artist and myself, I think we come up with a pretty darn good story, actually.
Now, of course, I know towards the end of the comic, we have another story as well.
Yes.
This is the Angel Wars, I believe?
Yes, it is.
Okay, what can you tell me a little bit about this? Because this also seems a little enticing.
This is going to be our next book out. This is actually part 0A in Until We Sleep Number 1, and 0B will be in Until We Sleep Number 2. And it's about a group of angels that are tired of waiting for God to bring about Armageddon. And so they take it upon themselves to create their own army. They fight the angels that are defending God and all that. And they are going to, I'm a big fan of Dante's Inferno and the Nine Circles of Hell. And that's what these angels are going to do. They're going to have to literally fight through all nine circles of hell to get to this object that's the annihilation I forgot what, anyway, but it's going to bring about Armageddon. And the Talisman is the word I'm trying to come up with. Sorry about that. And they're going to go through every level. Each level of hell is worse. The greater your sin, the deeper you go into the ninth circle. But the last circle of hell, that is where Satan is. And he is this giant monster with wings. And he is stuck in a lake of ice, and he is crying to try and get out, and as he cries, his tears keep the ice forming. Well, the stamp they're looking for, the Annihilation Talisman, is underneath him. He's guarding it, but they don't know that.
Oh, so Satan will make an appearance. Okay, cool.
Yes.
And
yes,
it's ironic that he's trapped in ice, so I guess hell did freeze over in a way.
It did.
How did he get trapped in the ice, by the way?
That was, I did a lot of studying with Dante's Inferno and things like that and all. And basically, what I got from my studies and all, because I think it's very important that you research everything you can and make the story as accurate as possible, is the fact that everyone believes that Satan is in this fire and molten lava realm and all like that. And Dante, with this kind of sarcastic way about him, and I thought, what if he was just trapped in ice? We don't know where this ice comes from. It's a magical ice. Fire doesn't burn it. Fire doesn't melt it. Fire doesn't do anything to it. And it's just a solid sheet of ice that Satan's wings are trapped in. He can't get out at all. And anytime the ice just happens to shift any and lower itself, it's his tears that keep it going. So it's an eternal ice flow he's stuck in.
That's interesting. You see, has this gotten any critical response at all?
Not yet. We just released the Until We Sleep number one, so the 0A is there. They actually won't get to the first circle until issue one. So issue A is the beginning and the reason why they're doing their things, excuse me, that they do. And 0B will be them having the war in heaven and then starting their attack toward hell. I have them going to an area in Siberia, and this is where the portal that opens up to the nine circles of hell is. Because I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but there is a video on YouTube called Transmission from Hell. And supposedly, back in the 80s, when they were drilling for oil in Siberia, they hit a pocket of land where it just opened up for no reason. And they thought, this is strange. So they lowered a microphone down into it, and you could hear cries and screams of thousands upon thousands of people. And so supposedly, this is the sounds from hell. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to put that in the book. So that's where the portal to hell will be, in the middle of Siberia. And it'll basically be like, I don't know, almost like a video game in book form, because they're going to have to like defeat each circle to get to where they need to go.
And there was a video game called Dante's Inferno that was out for the PlayStation 3, so...
That's true. You're right, yeah.
I never played it, but yeah.
Yeah, same here.
I am enticed by that. That actually sounds interesting. And getting back to, of course, for issue two for Until We Sleep, mm-hmm. one set of characters we didn't get to talk about yet were the Shadow Stalkers.
Yes, sir.
They've mm-hmm. been introduced. What are they going to be... Are they going to have a bigger part in issue two?
Yes, much bigger. Number two is actually their first appearance, and it's six souls that are trapped in Purgatory, and... the Lord of Purgatory and the Lord of Death are sensing this demon despair is starting to build this army, and Abaddon gives them the ability, these six souls, to have a second chance of life on Earth. But the twist is they don't come back as themselves; they come back as creatures based on the universal monsters from the 30s and 40s. So, of course, I can't use the actual names of what they used back then. So the Frankenstein character, for example, his character in the book, he's called the Patchwork Man. He's built up all these parts of bodies. Well, his power is, if he's in battle and he loses a limb, an arm or a leg or something like that, he can grab an arm or a limb, arm or a leg off of a fallen victim and attach it right back to his body, and it forms right back, and he's back to being a whole person again. Okay. So it's things like that. And basically, we have one that's like a zombie character, one that's like a vampire, the Frankenstein, the mummy character, the creature from the Black Lagoon, and we have, just to throw things off, we have an angel.
Perfect. Now, of course, I met you at Free Comic Book Day.
Yes.
And I know, are you going to be touring at the conventions? I believe you do have a tour coming up.
We do. We are going to do the first day Comic Con on June 28th in Delaware, and we're also going to be doing a signing at Collector's Corner in Bel Air on July 11th, and we're hoping for another signing, but I'm not allowed to say anything about that one right now.
Right.
And Baltimore for sure in September, when that's going to be our first really big show. So we're really, really excited about it. And I think we're going to amaze a lot of people. I think we have a really, really solid product here, and I think we're going to be. What I'm aiming for is that we're different. I don't want to be like every other comic book that Marvel and DC puts out. I want to be something different and fresh, and I want the fans to go, "Wow, this is really cool, and this is so different." And you know, because without the fans, you're nothing, and that's what it was. I want the fans. In fact. If I may let you know, I did a signing last Saturday, and we did a drawing at the signing, and a book that I'm working on for hopefully next year called The Primordials. It's a band of heroes based on the elements. I drew four names, and so there'll be Earth, Fire, Air, and Water. And so they will all be in the book. And that's what I like about doing signings and things like that. It's number one, getting to meet the fans, but number two, I want the fans to know that they're just as important to the book. And I want everybody to kind of I don't know. I just want everybody. I want it to be like a gathering where everybody that's a horror fan, or eventually we're doing science fiction, and younger readers of comics, and all that, we can all just get together and enjoy comics and make comics what they used to be, which was fun, without gimmicks and, you know, scratch off covers and chromium. I'm showing my age of chromium, I know. You know, things like that. And the one thing that amazes people, and I'm really, really proud of this, is that in our universe, when someone dies, they stay dead. We're not bringing them back. That's it.
Yeah, I've noticed Marvel has been doing that a lot. It's Marvel and DC. But, yeah, I think this will be good. Once you're dead, just, you know, it's hard to kill a fictional character, but I have to commend you that you're finally going to take that step, and you're not going to worry about killing off the character 15 minutes later and go, okay, well, just to sell a comic. I also commend you, of course, when you say you don't want the scratch and sniff issue or the Chrome issue. Yeah, I do remember the last Chrome issue that I ever held was a Bongo comic, Bartman, number one, I think, back in 94.
Okay.
As for Scratch and Sniff, there's the famous Harley Quinn that came out last year, but I did not pick it up. I just pick up the digital comics, but I do commend you that you're not worrying about, like, specialty covers in a way, which is good. I did, of course, ask you about a motion comic, because this does feel very visual, but I guess you're right. You don't want to stretch into five different directions right now, so I guess when the time comes for a motion comic, it'll come when it'll come. I do hope that it does, because I do feel that this is a very visual idea with the battles and how people being dragged in and being transformed from human to demon. That does seem... Especially, I'd like to see how it's... It has been done in the past with appliances and makeup and stop motion, but everything is so CGI. In regards to the motion comic, if it ever comes to be, of course, I've noticed with the battles and how, of course, the kid is being transported down into hell. My question, of course, would be, would there be like an 80s ballad? Would it be like an 80s rock opera, so to per se?
I would love that. That would be right up my alley, actually. So, yes, that would be terrific. I would really, really love that.
Because I kind of feel, for some reason, I don't know why, I keep going back to when that kid's going down to hell, it's kind of like Kenny from South Park, the movie. Or like with Beavis and Butthead, like when they're in the desert, it just screams. Like, I just came off from seeing Mad Max Fury Road today.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've seen it yet.
Not yet, but I want to. Everybody that I know that's seen it loved it.
Well, I like the first 15 minutes, like where the rigs are going out, and there's just this guy who's blind, but he's playing a guitar. Like all the rigs are going into battle. He's playing like this 80s rock guitar. That's how I feel. Yeah, so I'm kind of hoping if it stays in that sort of setting, that would be great. What does the future, of course, hold for your comic book work?
Well, we are going to branch out. We can't just be horror. You can't just be so one-dimensional. So we've got Until We Sleep in the Angel Wars, and then Steve, who's working with me on a lot of the books, he and I are doing a book called Blackjack. And that's going to be our homage to Tim Vigil's Faust book from the 90s, you know, where it was just massive amounts of gore and nudity and bad language and everything that we need. So we're going to be doing that. And then we're doing an anthology, 4 8-page stories, but it's going to be aimed at younger readers. So we'll be doing that as well. I want to branch out into science fiction, so I'm writing a script for a sci-fi book as well, and I've got two more horror books, and the Primordials, which I'm really, really excited about. I think that's going to be something big. So, but I like to write things on these grand scales. So, like, even the sci-fi book is going to start with like these astronomers looking through a telescope in an observatory, and they're literally watching stars disappear. And they're like, what the heck is going on here? And come to find out it's this warring group of aliens, and they've got this giant machine that basically is indestructible. It feeds off of planets and stars and matter and things like that. And, of course, it's headed for Earth, of course. So I'm looking forward to writing that. And, you know, I think sci-fi fans will really, really dig it. And yes, before anybody says anything, yes, it is kind of based on the Doomsday Machine on Star Trek.
You know, I'm not the biggest Star Trekkie ever. I'm more Star Wars than Trek, but I hear what you're saying. So I thank you for, you know, I love the fact you're not cramming references down people's throats and pop culture references and other references from comic books. So I do commend you for that as well.
Thank you.
Bob, where could the good people find you right now?
Well, we just started our own website. We finally joined the 21st century about 2 weeks ago, and it's at www.uwscomics.com, and right now you can get our book on there, and we even have a few of the variant covers on there. We're going to be doing t-shirts and prints and original art, and that is just the start. So it's onward and upward from here.
That's great. Well, Bob, I thank you so much, and of course for us, for Hunnic Outcast, we thank you the bottoms of our heart. Kendra was hoping to be on here, but she does send her love. She will be listening to this podcast soon. I'm sure she'll be in contact with you. You know, if you ever need an anchor, you know, she would be interested, I'm sure. There is one other question I did want to ask of you, and
sure.
If I can't bring this up now, of course, this will be edited out.
Okay.
But I think you mentioned that I may be a character in your book in the not-too-distant
yes.
future?
Mm-hmm. Yes. That the Primordials book. Yes. You're going to be a villain.
Oh.
I hope that's okay.
Oh, do you need my image at all, or how is this going to work?
No, I'm going to put your name in there. If we use your image and you don't like how your character is drawn or the direction that the character is going in the book, you can sue us.
Oh, I would never do that.
Oh, I know, but...
Yeah.
So we're just using names.
Oh, that...
We're doing... And everybody knows that. And I still have to come up with code names and all, and it was funny, when I did the drawing, all four of the picks were women. So I have an all-women superhero team book. Hasn't really been done that much, so I was like, wow, this must be a sign.
Yes. So, well, of course, I have LaShawn Colvin that she's doing one, and of course, Marvel came out with A-Force, so
right.
It's good that there's girl power, but don't get me wrong. And that's the other thing, too. I'm sure there'll be diversification. Bob, again, thank you. And for you, the listeners, you can find this over at Hunnic Outcasts, on iTunes, Spreaker, and of course, on GeekCastRadio.com and many other of the social media, Twitter at Hunnic Outcasts, and of course, join us next time as Kendra returns, and we're going to start going over our Mortal Kombat Street Fighter Retro series again with the Conquest series, and of course, we'll be doing Secret Wars, and we got a plethora of stuff, and some more artists for Hunnic Waterhall, and of course, I have another special announcement. We did have a poll right now for you, the listener, what you wanted to hear us review, Donnie Darko or Killer Tomatoes. We are going to be reviewing Donnie Darko this September. So, and yes, I even dug into the bowels of the most controversial sequel ever. I just heard about this, the S. Donnie Darko. I don't know what it is, but I'm kind of curious what it has to do with the original. So, make you a great escape into comics, and we'll talk to you next time.
Say, Jarvis, is it that time?
The house party protocol, sir?
Correct.
The Pull Bag is GCRN's comic book review and discussion-based podcast. Join me, your host, TFG and Mike, and the rest of the GCRN crew as we make our way through the comics we are reading. Inside the Pull Bag, you'll also find back-issue classics and origins episodes of how we got into comic reading. You can find the Pull Bag every Wednesday on iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Make your great escape into comics and jump into the Pull Bag today.
Jarvis. Hey.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?